Wayne, thanks very much for joining us. How are you?
Good. Yeah, everything's great, and just getting ready for the Hall of Fame night. So it's kind of a big day in the hockey world. So yeah, everything's fine.
Well, we appreciate you taking the time. Let's go right to that. What are your thoughts on the highlights? Because it hasn't been a game yet for the Oilers to take on Elias Pettersson. What do you think of what this young man has done and how he has brought such creativity to the NHL after a short month?
Well, it's, you know, the game of hockey is pretty amazing. When players sort of grow older and sort of disappear out of that sort of limelight, you always wonder, who's going to be able to fill that void and how are we going to replace that player? And the great thing about our game is there's always new blood that comes along. And I know that the Sedin twins were fixture in Vancouver and in the National Hockey League for a long time, and their retirement happened just shortly, and to see this young man come in and sort of excite the crowd and sort of put on a show every night for the people of Vancouver and the Canuck fans is nothing but a positive for our game. And you know, I've had a chance to see him a couple times on TV, and he's fun to watch, and he plays with a great deal of passion and energy, and it's exactly what the people in Vancouver needed to sort of move on without the Sedin era. And obviously he's been a godsend for the coaching staff there, because he's very coachable, obviously, and he's done a lot of good things for that organization already in this short time.
Does he remind you of you?
Yeah, you know what? Comparisons are what sports is all about. You know, when I was a player, and there was always this, okay, can he do this? Is he going to be able to do what Guy Lafleur did, or can he score as many goals as Mike Bossy? And then before you know it, a new guy comes along and they're comparing him to you, and that happened pretty quickly when Mario came in. And that's just the nature of sports. You know, we want to sit down and we want to find comparables. We want to see, okay, does this guy remind us of that player? And, you know, from my point of view, he's got a lot of my similarities. You know, obviously that his hockey sense and his playmaking ability is as good as anybody right now. And that's probably where the comparisons come from, is much more the playmaking than anything else.
You touched on the fact that, you know, you've heard the comparisons to you with other players, and I think noticing when you speak on players and next generations, you're always very mindful. But when I think of you kind of handing down sort of the golden touch or the rub, if you will, I remember you praising Sidney Crosby, where, you know, Sid was maybe 14, 15 at the time, and you kind of gave... You know, I would think that somebody, what you experienced, the sort of hype as being the phenom, this can't-miss prospect, the hype that you carrying the sport for so many years, you must be pretty mindful in terms of picking your spots. When do you sort of kind of anoint? Because, you know, your words carry a lot of weight in this sport. So what makes you, I guess, say or make that read in terms of a player that can handle it or maybe can't?
Well, first of all, you know, to make the NHL, you got to be a pretty good player. It's tough to play in the National Hockey League. The players today are bigger and faster and stronger. The equipment's better. Just, you know, our game has progressed. So just to make the National Hockey League, I think, is something special and something unique on its own. And then I was lucky that, you know, my idol growing up was Gordie Howe, who happened to be the greatest player. But more importantly, he was the nicest man. And if you ever listen to Gordie Howe talk, he was always strong as far as being positive about the game. And yet he was also aware of not trying to put too much pressure on individual players. And from my point of view, you know, Sidney Crosby has gone beyond what people probably even anticipated or expected out of his career. You know, he's got 2 gold medals. He's got 3 Stanley Cups. He's carried himself with a great deal of class, and he's been sort of the poster boy, probably him and Alex Ovechkin, over the last 10 or 12 years. So he's been very special. And then, you know, the game itself, we're lucky that guys like Austin Matthews and Nathan MacKinnon and, of course, Connor McDavid now have come along, and there seem to be that new breed of player that's maybe a little bit bigger, a little bit faster. It's a different kind of a player than a guy like Sidney played. But a guy like Pettersson plays probably a lot more on the lines of the way Sidney plays and the way I played, in that he's got to utilize his eyes and his hockey sense and rely on his instinctability on the ice because, you know, he's not a big guy, and Sidney by no means was a big man either. But his hockey sense, Sidney always seemed to be one step ahead of everyone else, and consequently, to me, the best players are the guys that win championships. And ultimately, as a leader and as a guy that wins MVPs and you win scoring titles, that's all great and that's all gravy. But at the end of the day, it's about lifting the Stanley Cup. And, you know, you look at Alex Ovechkin and his pursuit over the years of wanting to win a Stanley Cup so desperately. And here's a guy that, you know, has won the Rocket Richard Trophy, I guess, 7 times, and I think he's won the MVP. All that just really doesn't add up unless you can lift the Stanley Cup. And so Pettersson is a young kid right now. He's very young, and it's a young organization in Vancouver. They've done a lot of great things over the last 12 months, and I'm sure the people in Vancouver got to be really excited about the destination of that hockey club, because there seems to be a really strong, good direction for that organization, and that's great for Vancouver.
Hey, Wayne, I don't ever see any of your scoring records ever broken. And I look at junior teams, they barely got, you know, 2-3 guys averaging a point a game. Mm-hmm. Talk about offense. I'm not seeing it, the creativity in junior and sometimes in minor hockey. Mm-hmm. What about you?
You know, it's a different game today, and it goes all the way back to kids. You know, there was a friend of mine that did this documentary called The Red Army, and I went to the premiere of about 5 years ago, and it was so well done. I said to him, if you ever do anything else, please call me. And about 2.5 years ago, he called me. He was doing this documentary, and he named it In Search of Greatness, and it just came out last week. And he has all these sort of sports psychologists on there. He's got Pele on there, myself, and Serena Williams, and McEnroe, and Jerry Rice. And it's really interesting to how we kind of grew up and how we just kind of threw the ball out there or threw the puck out there, and you played 4 against 4, you played 5 against 5, you played shinny hockey all day long. And these kids today, right at the age of 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, you know, the coaching philosophy is to, you know, stay in your lane, and the defensemen stay home, and the center's a two-way checking centerman. So in some ways, the creativity is so different than it used to be. There's fewer and fewer players that play the style game that Sidney does, or Pettersson, or Connor. Everything's so much more structured now, all the way back to Pee Wee hockey and Junior B hockey and Junior A hockey. And that's just the system that we live in today, and that's what we're under. It doesn't mean the players aren't better today, because I happen to think the athletes today are better than when we played in the 80s. But that's not a knock against the guys in the 80s, because 15 years from now, I'm sure the game is going to be better than it is today. That's just called progression. And that just means the game is in healthy shape. But it is a different game today than when I grew up, no question.
But that does take the creativity away, Wayne, don't you think? You just playing outside in Ontario, or kids, I grew up in Edmonton, the outdoor rinks, because you've got so many teams and they're allotted that 90 minutes, 60 minutes of ice time. As soon as you get on the ice, the coach has you running the drills. The creativity comes when you're just allowed to kind of free flow, isn't it?
Yeah, it's different today. There's no question. I often joke that if you took 10 kids to a pond and you threw a puck out there, they would stand there and wait for you to start setting up drills.
Yeah.
And whereas, you know, if we had 6 players, we played 3 against 3. If you've had 9 guys, you've figured out a way to make it work, because one team had 4 and one had 5. In today's game and today's sports in itself, you know, everything is designed to do drills and to set up systems and all that kind of stuff. So it's definitely different. There's no question about it. But in saying that, I still think the game is better today than it was 20 years ago.
Wayne Gretzky with us here on Sportsnet 650. The commissioner is entering the Hall of Fame later tonight. And it's funny how Gary Bettman, I think, amongst fans is such a polarizing individual. Mm-hmm. You see the boos and you hear the boos. But, you know, and then you look at, I mean, you spent some time with the Coyotes. And, mm-hmm. you know, there are people that sit there and say, well, why are you so committed to Arizona? But, you know, you look at how he has been committed to keeping a team like that in a market like Phoenix. What goes through your mind when you think of Gary Bettman entering mm-hmm. the Hall of Fame? Has he been good for the game?
Oh, he's been outstanding for the game. Listen, who I always say that I don't select and I don't pick who goes in the Hall of Fame, but each and every guy that does go in, good for them. I shake their hand. It's a great honor. To me, it's one of the great things about our sport is our Hall of Fame. It's pretty special. You know, from Gary's point of view, the game has changed drastically, and I often tease about this, that in the 80s, it could be halfway through the season, if Harold Ballard didn't like something, the rule got changed the next day. So it was kind of run within the National Hockey League. And he took it to more of a business level, and by that I mean there's more of a partnership between the players, the union. He's tried to really make the game much more fan-friendly. He's got always sitting down trying to do studies to open up the game, to get more offense, let skilled players play, get the game faster. He took out the red line, et cetera, et cetera. And probably, from my point of view, one of the biggest things he could have done for Canada and for the small market teams was getting a salary cap. And that really cemented the fact that teams like Calgary and Edmonton and Ottawa and places like Phoenix and even places like St. Louis and Tampa Bay, the smaller market places, had a chance to compete against teams like Philadelphia and Toronto and Chicago and New York. And so from that point of view, he stabilized the whole entire National Hockey League. Now, do they have some issues and problems with a couple of the teams? No question. But our sport has gotten bigger throughout North America. I think about how Winnipeg is back in the National Hockey League now, and they can compete on the level of the Torontos and the Montreals, whereas when they originally moved in the 90s, you know, their payroll was at $23 million and Philadelphia was at $75 million. So you just can't compete. So he's done a nice job at really protecting the small market teams. But I think that even beyond that, the game has grown. The TV revenues are way higher than they've ever been. And, you know, obviously a big part of that is the product, the players themselves. They're great kids. They carry themselves with a great deal of class. And people want to watch and follow the sport of hockey now. And spent a lot of time in the Southwest, and it's different down there than it is in Vancouver and Edmonton and Toronto. But I'll tell you this, you know, 20 years ago, I would have never thought that on a Friday night you could have 17,000 people at an Anaheim Ducks game, and the same night you'd have 18,000 people on an LA Kings game. I mean, in the 80s, we were just trying to get 15,000 people to the Forum. So you can see how the sport is growing, and more kids are playing the sport. More and more kids want to be involved in the sport, and that's making the sport even bigger than it is today. So, yeah, he's done a wonderful job of growing our game and making our game feasible for small market teams.
With the commissioner, not only does he go into the hall tonight, he also, I guess, as a league as a whole, gets a win today, that they reached an agreement with the ex-players on that concussion lawsuit. A quick thought on that?
Yeah, you know what? There was a lot of guys in the 70s and 80s, and especially in that era where there was no helmets, and there was obviously a lot more fighting, and the game was in some ways more physical and yet in some ways less physical than it is today. But there was issues, and part of the issues that we had in the 70s and 80s was knowledge. You know, people ask me all the time, my kids even say, Dad, did you ever have any concussions? And, you know, back then it was like if you got hit and you had a headache, they'd say, take two aspirin and come to practice tomorrow and we'll sweat it out of you. We didn't know what we were dealing with. And so thankfully, you know, over time we've gained way more knowledge on concussions and taken way more seriously. And it's good to see that the NHL and the players have finally reached an agreement on some of the issues that took place.
Wayne, without naming names, I mean, are there a lot of guys that you know that you see are struggling now after their hockey career is done?
Oh, yeah. You know, one of the guys that I think that I've seen over the years, I played with him and won a Stanley Cup with him, and one of the nicest people I ever met in hockey, played in Vancouver, Jeff Courtnell. He struggles to this day. You know, he was physically beat up, had many concussions, and, you know, you see one or two, three, four guys like that, and, you know, it affects their daily life. And so, you know, like I said, in the 80s and 90s, we didn't know what we were dealing with. And it wasn't just hockey, it was football and probably baseball. And, you know, I've even heard over the years, and, you know, I'm not sure exactly how to phrase it, but people tell me all the time that back in the 20s, that Lou Gehrig, you know, in those days, you didn't wear batting helmets. And they claim that over the years, at 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 times, he was hit in the head with fastballs, and maybe that triggered some of the ALS. And so concussions are very serious, and it's been going on in pro sports all the way back to then. But just now that we're really getting our hands around it as best as the doctors can.
Wayne, we had an incident. You know, Matheson hit Pettersson, threw him to the ice, and there was a lot of complaints about no retribution on Matheson. Where are you with that type of physicality and that retribution, eye for an eye? It's the code. Where are you with that?
Well, the game's changed. Eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, and I tell this to people quite often. There was a famous quote by Gordie Howe, and he would say, you know, just get a number and you can get them at another time. And the sort of history of it is that sometimes Gordie Howe would wait a year and a half before he got even with a guy. But, you know, in this day and age, we do our policing through the TV cameras. There's TV cameras at every angle. Back in the 60s and 70s, a lot of the games weren't even on TV, so the players policed themselves. And now, you know, the policing is done, obviously, by people in New York and Toronto. I think that the players have a good handle on it themselves. They don't want that aspect of the game to be in the game. So as long as the players themselves really push for, we can't have hits to the head and we can't have things like this go on in the game, then we're always going to police the game properly. So, you know what? It's unfortunate that that happened to him. You know, the old days, it probably would have been, benches would have been emptied and the fighting would have carried on, but that's not the way it is today. And it's just a different era and a different time. And he received his retribution from the league, and that's just, and you move on.
How much do you talk to Connor McDavid and just offer him advice? He was probably a little faster than you were, but you deal with so much media, and Connor has that too. You guys talk quite a bit, or do you keep your distance?
Well, listen, first of all, I'm very conscious of the boundaries. I'm not the coach, and I'm not the general manager of the team. I don't like to interfere. That's not my responsibility, but obviously I've been through a lot of what Connor is probably going through and going to go through in the future. And it just happens that we both played a lot of our career in Edmonton. But let me tell you this. Connor's been under the microscope since he was 14 or 15 years old. He comes from a really nice family. He went to a really good junior organization, a guy by the name of Sherry Basson. So everybody's always sort of understood and taken care of Connor. And then coming to Edmonton and being with our organization, Connor handles himself extremely well. Some nights are probably tougher than others. Right now, after losing four games in a row, that, you know, the media come right to you directly. They want to hear what's wrong from the captain and from the best player. But he deals with it very well. We do talk a lot when I'm around the team. I spend time with him. But listen, he's been through it, and he understands who he is and what he means to the city and what he means to the National Hockey League. And I just really, I'm there if he needs to vent or if he wants to ask me things. I'm not there really to interfere with the hockey club whatsoever.
Wayne, just in closing here, you know, obviously people, so many people define you as an Edmonton Oiler, but you also helped make L.A. and the growth into southern states all across America famous. I know you spend time in Los Angeles still. Everything's safe from the wildfire standpoint?
Yeah, you know what? We had a tough week. We had that unfortunate shooting where 12 innocent people died, which was, you know, minutes from our house. And friends and family. My kids kind of spent time in that place, and before we knew it, you know, the city was kind of on fire, and some of my friends lost their houses, and some of my kids' friends have lost their houses. Fortunately, we've really had no fatalities in our area. They haven't been as fortunate in Northern California, but, you know, it's been a tough 3 or 4 days, and it's a great community. It's a wonderful place to live and raise a family, and you know, I'm sure that we're going to get through this, and there's better days ahead.
Wayne, thank you for your time. Just one personal note here, because, you know, you talk about that. Growing up in Edmonton, I was great friends with a lady who was meant a lot to you. She was your housekeeper, your cook, everything in the name of Berkey.
And, oh, wow. Yeah, small world.
It is a small world, and you sent me an email that I read because I did her eulogy. And it was amazing what you said, and I had one regret. 6 months later, covering the Canucks in L.A., I saw you and Janet in a restaurant, and no one was there. And I didn't say hi to you and mention thanks for writing that. And when I talked to her son and said, he said, did you say hi to Wayne? I said, no. And he said, my mom would have liked that.
It was an incredible experience because she used to make pregame meal every day for myself, Mark Messier, and Kevin Lowe. The three of us would be there every day for our pregame meal, and she was just a wonderful lady. She never asked for a thing, and she just worked her rear end off, and it was she was just wonderful.
Well, I regretted not doing that. I thank you for allowing me to share that
what
with
was
you.
The meal?
Well, Berkey was well,
what
she
was
could
the
do
meal?
It all, man.
What was the pregame meal though, Wayne?
Well, mine was different. I had the exact same pregame meal for my whole career. My dad was a big steak and potato guy, so I had steak, potato, corn. Mark Messier likes spaghetti and chicken, so we had a little bit of everything.
And now kids across Canada will be asking that
potatoes.
For their next game.
Yeah.
Wade, thank you so much for your time. It's really appreciated.
All right, listen, congratulations to the Canucks. They're fun to watch, and good for you guys. Enjoy your day.